All right.
Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
Found my papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and light me up and throw away the key. Or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away. Huh. But I feel alright. I feel alright tonight.
All right. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Showcase Studios, looking out on Michigan Avenue here in the glass box. If you'd like to come by, we're here till midnight. The phone number is 312-981-7200. That's also where you can send your texts. You can check us out on Twitter, but the best way to stay connected is to like us on Facebook, facebook.com/NickDShow, here till midnight. Coming up after the 9:30 news, the great Roy Leonard will join us to talk about some entertainment stuff. Usually covers some movies and theater. Whatever's on his mind, he can talk about it. Check out RoyLeonard.com for his blog and reviews and all kinds of cool stuff. Still keeping busy, man, after all these years. So Roy will join us after 9:30. After 10, we'll do our regular features, Drunks in the News, brought to you by the greatest restaurant on the planet, the Gale Street Inn. Say hi to George when you go there. Tell him I sent you. Gale Street Inn, greatest restaurant ever, and we thank them for sponsoring Drunks in the News. Straight Out of Context and Nick D Show Spies as well. And then after 10:30, Eric Childress and Colin Suter join me for the movie reviews, which we have not done in 2 weeks. We were preempted by the Cubs a couple of weeks ago. Last Saturday, I was at the Flashback Convention, so I was not. I took the night off, and so we've got a lot of movies to catch up on. So we're going to start at 10:30 and try to cram as much stuff in there. Movies from a couple of weeks ago, movies from last week, movies from this week, and the on-demand stuff as well. So we got a packed show for you tonight. The phone number is 312-981-7200, as I've said. And
I just say thank you?
For what?
For Tuesday night.
For Tuesday night.
For the movie night.
Oh, for Animal House? Oh. I didn't make it. Huh? I didn't make the movie.
I know you didn't
make
John
Landis.
You made the night. You picked the movie.
Yeah.
You set it up. I can't explain enough in detail to make the listeners understand how great of a night it is when we go watch a movie on that humongous screen.
Yeah. It's great. And we had a nice big turnout.
It was almost packed.
Yeah. I mean,
seriously.
The last two have been really packed. The one before, the month before. In July, when we did
it was Monty Python. Wasn't
Monty
it?
Python and the Holy Grail was by far the biggest crowd we've ever had. But we had a nice big crowd for Animal House. It was really cool. It was fun. The next one is September 9th, and we're showing The Road Warrior.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of fun.
Awesome.
And thanks for coming out.
Yeah, it's great. I know I kind of promoted it on my little Facebook this morning, but December.
Yeah, Die Hard.
Oh.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And what's the special treat?
Twinkies.
Thank you.
Because the character in Die Hard loves Twinkies, so we'll be throwing Twinkies out.
And it was his birthday, the actor's birthday.
Oh,
I think it was today.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Johnson.
Reginald Vel Johnson,
yeah.
Yeah, that guy had to spend 7 years with Urkel.
I know.
So, yeah. You gotta get
but again, a great night. Well, if you have not had a chance to go to Nick's film club, it's usually the first Tuesday of every month.
Yeah, it's usually the first Tuesday, but we don't want to be. We didn't want to do it the Tuesday after Labor Day because everybody will be upset because they had to go back to work.
Exactly.
Tuesday. So we're giving it a week.
Right.
So we're coming. We're going to be doing it on September
9th.
And then October, the first Tuesday in October, we're going to do Cabin in the Woods, which is, I think, one of the best horror films.
See, now I haven't seen
it's
that one
great.
Yet.
Great.
Really?
It's great and funny and surprising and awesome. So that's going to be in October for Halloween, Cabin in the Woods. November for Thanksgiving, we're showing The Apartment with Jack Lemmon and
Shirley
MacLaine.
Movie.
One of my favorites.
Yeah.
The great Billy Wilder. I believe this is the third Billy Wilder movie we've shown at our film club. And then, like you mentioned, in December, we'll be doing Die Hard. And then Mike and I are going to get together probably in November to iron out what we're going to do for at least the first half of 2015. So
great. I did suggest to him, and I will tell you, I wanted to set up something special for you, and I know I can't do it because I don't have the connections, but how great would it be if you were to screen one of Jerry Lewis's favorite movies and then actually hook up with him on Skype on the big screen from wherever he's living?
Well, that won't be real easy.
Well, it's technically very doable.
Yeah.
But I don't have the connections.
Yeah, neither do I.
I don't know the people that he knows, but that would be totally awesome because I know he's your favorite.
Yeah. We talked about his one of his movies. We were talking about either Nutty Professor or The Patsy to show at the film club. So, those are great movies.
That would be awesome.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for coming out. And, so we got another one September 9th. Come on out to see The Road Warrior. It's at the MovieCo Theater in Rosemont. You can actually reserve your seats now at MovieCo.com. That's MUVICO. Now, yesterday I was greeted with the greatest news I've heard in a long, long time. Variety is reporting that Craig Ferguson is in final negotiations for a syndicated talk show on the Tribune Media. So he'll be on Channel 9. And it's going to be weeknights at 6 p.m.
Oh, look at you. Are you drooling?
Oh, my God. And and his celebrity name game game show will be on at 10 p.m. on Channel 9.
Two programs?
Yes.
Wait.
A talk show and a game show.
Is he doing the game show now? And he's not doing that now, is he?
Yeah. No, it doesn't start till September. Both of these shows will kick off. Well, actually, the talk show won't kick off till the beginning of 2015 because he's on CBS.
Yeah.
He's on CBS till December 19th. That's
okay.
His last show. But here's what it says. Craig Ferguson is in final negotiations with Tribune Media. So that means we're co-workers.
Look at you. You're going to be on the first show.
How about that? We're co-workers.
You're going to be on the first show.
We are all now co-workers with Craig Ferguson.
How cool is that?
By the way, I just finished his autobiography. It came out about 4 years ago, and I just got around to reading it. And it's phenomenal. It's revealing and touching and funny and brilliant, just like he is. It's called American on Purpose. It's a great memoir, and I finished it in a day and a half. It's a phenomenal book. So it's been out there for a while. I just picked it up at Amazon, and I suggest everybody get it, especially if you're a fan. So it says Craig Ferguson is in final negotiations with Tribune Media to host a daily syndicated half-hour talk show that would air in the 7 p.m. hour, 6 Central, across Tribune Broadcasting's 42 stations. The show is targeted to bow in the fall of 2015. Oh, boy. So
Wait
we got a
minute.
Year.
Yeah.
Okay. It's expected that Michael Natus, executive producer of The Late Late Show with Craig Ferguson, will be on board as showrunner of the show, which will blend comedy and talk show elements. The intent is to rev up the hour leading into prime time with Ferguson Yacker paired with 7:30 with the primetime sitcoms a la Two and a Half Men or The Big Bang Theory. Reps for Tribune Media and Ferguson declined to comment. Tribune is in talks with the distributors to handle national distribution of the show beyond its stations, which will reach 42% of the U.S. TV households and cover top marketing, including New York, L.A., and Chicago for WGN. Tribune's muscle with first-run Cindy Fair expanded last year when it doubled its station's ratings with a $2.7 billion acquisition of the local TV station group. The Ferguson deal marks the first syndicated show of its kind developed for the access time period, meaning the hour leading into primetime, in years. Tribune took a shot at fielding the first late-night Cindy Yacker in the past season with The Return of Arsenio Hall. That show did not go the distance beyond one season. The hope is that Ferguson will bring his established fan base to the time period with far less talk, variety, comedy, competition. Clearances in access time periods may be hard to come outside of the Tribune market. The established players are still pretty well entrenched, like Wheel of Fortune or Jeopardy, Entertainment Tonight, The Insider, Extra, Access Hollywood. But the local stations facing a drought of strong new sitcoms to program the access hour, more stations don't have any first-run stalwarts that may be open. Among the distributors to mix in the mix to handle national sales of the show is Debnar Mercury, which is already in business with Ferguson and Tribune on the Cindy game show Celebrity Name Game, which will start next month. Name Game is widely cleared on Tribune stations and could be paired up with the 7:30 time slot with the new Yacker if the show clicks in its first season. So if the Celebrity Name Game is doing well because they're going to start it at 10 o'clock, Celebrity Name Game. If it's doing well, by the time Craig's show starts in next fall, it might be 6 o'clock, the talk show, and then 6:30, the game show. So specifics about Ferguson's new show are a little sketchy, but it's expected to have a slot for guests and be a showcase for the offbeat humor that has made Ferguson distinct among the late-night pack. On the Late Late Show, Ferguson's sidekick is a robot skeleton named Jeff, who is dressed as if he's headed for a Price is Right taping, which is a joke inspired by the fact that the two shows are taped on the same lot. And Ferguson has regular visits with Secretariat, which is also known as two people on the side of a horse costume. For Ferguson, the shift to syndication will require some tailoring of his unique brand of yucks for a broader audience in an earlier time period and in a 30-minute time format, as opposed to the hour that the late show is. For Tribune, the move to recruit a marquee name is a sign that the company, under the leadership of Network and Cable Programming Vice President Peter Liguori, is intent on using its formidable reach to be a bigger player and shake up the conventions of local programming outside primetime. So there you go.
And you got it. You didn't make mention of the most important character who's on the show.
Who's that? Oh, Nikki D.
Nikki D.
Yeah, Nikki D. They don't mention Nikki D that much anymore. The whole invisible band, the shy band thing, because you know the show changes every night.
Right.
And I mean everything is improvised. So if they do a bit, sometimes it lasts for maybe a couple of weeks, and then it falls off, and they bring it back. And the shy fellas, led by Alfredo Sauce. That bit has kind of fallen off, but it had a strong run for a couple of months. So anyway, I couldn't be more thrilled. I'm really I'm just beside myself. And there won't be any Craig missing from television, because we got the game show to keep us tied over until the talk show starts. But that's great news, and I just love the fact that we're coworkers now.
And your people are going to have to talk to his people to make sure you get on.
Well, we'll see. I don't know. And for those of you who are not aware, he's going to be live doing his stand-up, doing a show at the Chicago Theater November 16th. Tickets, I believe, are still on sale. I don't know if it's sold out or not. We gave away a pair the day that the tickets went on sale. We gave away a pair. And I was actually the first person to announce it nationally that he was there in Chicago, that he was going to be playing at the Chicago Theater. So it's November 16th. I've already got my tickets for that. That's all set. That's done, man. And there's a real, real good chance I'm going backstage. So, yeah, that's November 16th.
Lots of pictures. Lots of pictures.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I don't know. The thing is, I don't know if. I've seen his stand up on DVD. I've never seen him live. I know that Steve and Johnny did a few years back. They saw him over at the Chicago Theater, and then they ended up meeting him backstage, and they got pictures with him and stuff. So that's pretty cool. And I was like I said, I told Steve and Johnny in December. Remember on Christmas week when they filled in on the morning show?
Yeah.
I told them when we were doing Crosstalk that I was way late on the train on this one, that I missed the boat entirely. Like and they kept telling me years ago, they're like, Ferguson is the man.
Yeah, it did
He's
take
the best.
You a while to
yeah,
catch
I didn't start
on.
Watching
yeah.
him. I didn't start watching him until about a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
And my ex-wife Heather used to love him, and I would kind of sit there and kind of shake my head and go, I don't really get this. And I was, I've texted her and said, hey. I was wrong. Sorry. Well, I was wrong about a lot of things, which explains why we're divorced. But this is one of them. So Craig Ferguson is going to be back in a syndicated talk show next fall on the Tribune Network, which means it'll be on WGN. His talk show starts September 23rd at 10 o'clock on Channel 9. And again, you can see him live November 16th at the Chicago Theater. Check out the internet for tickets. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Studios on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. We're not. We're in the Showcase Studio. I'm just by rote. I always say that because 5 mornings a week, I am upstairs on the 7th floor. We're in the Showcase Studio down here hanging out, and we're here until midnight. After 10 o'clock, we'll do all of our regular features, Drunks in the News, brought to you by the greatest restaurant on the planet, the Gale Street Inn, and also Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies. And then after 10:30, we got a lot of catching up to do with Colin and Eric. We haven't reviewed movies in a couple of weeks, so we've got a lot catching up to do. We were supposed to be joined by Roy, but he's not answering his phone. So I guess you gave it a shot. Danny called him a couple times.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll hopefully Roy is listening and he'll he'll call in, or maybe he's busy. I'm not really sure. We'll see what's going on.
Maybe he's got he had a play tonight or something.
Yeah, he may be. I'm not really sure, but yeah. So anyway, Roy is not answering the phone. So we'll just have to improvise. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And we're going to talk about, you know, since Craig Ferguson is going to have another stab at a talk show, I thought maybe we could talk about your favorite talk shows and your favorite talk show guests. 312-981-7200. Who are some of your favorite hosts, past, present, you know, and also who are some of the guaranteed great guests? For as far as Letterman goes, Letterman is, you know, my favorite, obviously, is Craig. And he's, you know, my favorite. And I love The Late Late Show. Dave Letterman has always been my favorite for years. I loved him, and I still think he's great. And there are certain guests that come on Letterman's show that really, really excel. And one of them, oddly enough, is Bruce Willis. Every time Bruce Willis is on Letterman, it's hilarious. Like, he comes out with some ridiculous costume on. He's up for anything.
Every time he's on, it's tongue-in-cheek.
Oh, well, yeah.
You don't take anything serious.
He comes out, I mean, seriously, you know, he comes out with, like, wigs on and stupid costumes, mm-hmm. and it's always great. So Bruce Willis on Letterman is always classic. One of the best talk show guests ever on any show, whether it be The Tonight Show or Letterman or whatever show he's on, is Martin Short.
Really?
Oh, man. Martin Short is, you know, he's done a lot of stupid stuff. I didn't like that. What's that Jiminy Glick character?
Oh,
I hated that.
Jimmy, yeah.
And, you know, he's been in some dumb movies and things like that, but he's always gold on the talk shows. Hmm. He's hilarious.
I thought you were going to say Bill Murray.
Well, Bill Murray on Letterman specifically. Yeah. The last time I saw Bill Murray on Letterman, he came in as Peter Pan and flew in. God. And they had to lower him down. And he came in dressed up like Peter Pan. And he's a great guest, too. Yeah. So what do you 312-981-7200. A lot of people would argue that we just lost last week. We just lost one of the
greatest guests
of all time in Robin Williams. I wasn't a fan, but a lot of people would probably put Robin Williams on their list. So
I've got to split mine up into two categories, late night and daytime.
Okay. I don't watch the daytime shows.
Well, I don't now. I mean, every so often Ellen is on when I walk into the room. But Merv Griffin.
Oh, well, yeah.
For daytime.
Yeah.
And since I'm real old school, Johnny Carson. Before the last 5-6 years of his show.
Well, the last 5-6 years of his show, he was working like two nights a week.
Right.
You know, he was taking a lot of time off.
But I'm talking before
that.
Well,
no, there's nobody better than Johnny Carson. Right. I mean, he's the best that there ever was, Johnny Carson.
And some of his classic shows, when you would have Sinatra, Rickles, that gang. Oh, he lost it.
You go back and you look, because there's a lot of this stuff is archived, and you can get it on YouTube. And if you go back and look at, you know, what Carson did, like, in the 70s and the 60s, nobody was better at it. Nobody. And he had all the top guests. And I like watching the old ones where everybody's smoking.
Yeah.
And they're all
like
drinking.
When he was still in New York.
Yeah.
Before he moved to L.A., even though they kept smoking there, too.
Yeah. So it's interesting to go back and find that stuff. And, you know, one of my favorite bits that we've played on the air before was when he was off one night. He was off on it was probably a Monday because he took Mondays off a lot of times. So Carson was off, and Don Rickles guest hosted. And so during the show, Rickles was doing some bit and getting all crazy, and he ended up breaking Johnny's cigarette case.
The case, yeah,
because he had a wooden cigarette case on his desk, and Rickles broke it. So the next night, Carson comes in and he's talking. All of a sudden, he goes to move the cigarette case and the lid breaks off. And he's like, "What the hell happened to this thing? What's going on in this?" And Doc Severinsen was on because I guess Ed had the night off. So Doc Severinsen was in the guest, you know, the co-host spot, the sidekick spot. And he's like, "That Rickles did that last night." He's like, "What?" "Yeah, Rickles did that last night." And he's like, "What the hell is wrong with Rickles?" And so they go, "You know, he's taping CPO Sharky right across the hall." And he's like, "Oh, really?" Carson's like, "Oh, really? He's taping CPO Sharky? Get a camera. I'm going over there right now." So he grabs a mic and he gets the broken cigarette case.
Yeah.
And the camera follows him, and he interrupts the taping of CPO Sharkey in front of the live audience. And Rickles was beside himself, and he's like, "Why did you break my cigarette case?"
I think Rickles was shaking.
Oh yeah, he
honest
was.
To God,
he was. He's like, "Leave me." It was. So we played that bit, you know, several times on the air. It's one of my favorite bits ever. And you want to talk about even to this day.
Yeah.
Rickles is one of the greatest guests that you could have
course.
On a talk show. The
of
guy's
course.
Like 89 years old,
yeah,
and he still comes out and kills it every single time he comes on a talk show.
And there's
show.
No one else like him.
No one else.
No.
And nobody can get away with the kind of stuff
no.
that he says. You know what I mean? Like, because, you know, there's some really un-PC and sort of racist stuff that flies out of Don Rickles' mouth on a regular basis.
Yep.
And nobody could get away with it except for him.
No.
Nobody. All right, we got some people calling in. What are your favorite talk shows and guests and hosts? 312-981-7200. That's the phone number and the text number. 312-981-7200. Let's go to the phones. And here's Kathy. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Nick.
Hi,
hi Roger. How's everybody?
All okay. right.
I just love Christopher Walken on David Letterman, and I love Betty White on David Letterman.
Oh, Betty White, in particular, on Ferguson's show. Craig has her on. I'm not kidding. He has her on like once every 6 weeks, even if she's got nothing to promote. He has Betty White on. He has had such a strong relationship with her for years, and he, you know, has appeared on Hot in Cleveland a bunch of times, Craig Ferguson, and so he's got a great relationship with Betty White. And you're right, she's great on Letterman as well.
Yeah, I just love Chris Walken when he's on Letterman, because Letterman always looks at him like, are you going to kill me now or win?
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Well, Christopher Walken is a pretty eccentric and strange dude. There's no question about it.
Here's a tidbit. If I turn my radio upside down now that I'm living in my new complex there, I get you in clear as a day.
What? Just because you're turning the radio upside down? That's interesting.
It is, but I'm going to stay with it.
Okay, so, good. Whatever, hey, whatever makes us sound better, Kathy. Do whatever you got to do. All right, take
Bye.
Care. See ya.
Bye.
Bye. 312-981-7200. This is Matt on WGN. Hi, Matt.
Hey, Nick.
Hey.
The one talk show that I always talk with or watch more than any is The Daily Show, and there's three guests in particular. The one I like, you know, in terms of political, Bill O'Reilly. But you know, we'll kind of,
well,
either,
that's always
sparring over there.
Yeah, that's always fun to watch John tear him apart. You know what I mean?
But in terms of celebrity guests, the three that are just great to watch. You have whenever Ricky Gervais is on, just the two of them joking back and forth, and of course, anytime Gervais lets out that laugh,
it's the best.
When Steve Carell is on, they're always got some planned weird little bit together.
Yeah.
And you know, it's great to see them back together, and then to see him and Dennis Leary just sort of, you know, sling mud at each other's
absolutely.
Acting careers.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
Those three right there. The second I hear any of those three around, it's like, okay, I know where my butt is going to be sitting at 10 o'clock.
I'm with you 100%, man. I'm with you 100%. And Leary, especially on The Daily Show, because he and John have a very long relationship. They're both from Boston. They came up through the same ranks in the world of stand-up, and you're right. All they do is just like rip each other apart whenever he's
on. And even Dennis Leary, he's on with Ferguson too.
Yeah, he's great.
The two of them.
Well, you know what's funny? The last time Leary was on Ferguson, it was a couple of months ago, he came on and he mentioned that they used to do stand-up in Edinburgh, and Gervais was like, yeah, I don't remember any of that.
Is that the one with Leary when he was on Ferguson? The last time was that for, I think, like, it was Amazing Spider-Man 2, and the first thing he did was walk up to the camera and get his shameless.
Yep, that's right. He walked up to the camera, did his plug, and then sat down. Because he knows that Ferguson doesn't care, you know, and he's not going to get to the plug because Ferguson tears up the blue cards and says whatever he wants to say. So,
yeah,
that's great.
But yeah, those three, any of them, first, like, must watch with The Daily Show, in my opinion.
Okay. All right, Matt, thanks, buddy.
No problem.
Take care. Ricky Gervais, by the way, he mentioned Ricky Gervais. Ricky Gervais is one of my favorite people on this planet. I love Ricky Gervais. I think he's a genius. I think he's hilarious. And like Matt said, he's got the greatest laugh ever. It's just the best. All right. We've got some lines open if you want to jump in. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. That's also a text number. We haven't heard back from Roy, so we're probably just going to keep talking about this. And we will continue to talk about your favorite guests and talk shows and all that cool stuff. Craig Ferguson is not going to be long gone from the world of talk shows, and we have the game show Celebrity Name Game to keep us company until next fall when he comes back to syndication right here on Channel 9 in Chicago. All right, we'll take a quick break. 312-981-7200. It's Nick DiGilio on a Saturday night on WGN. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Showcase Studios in the glass box looking out at Michigan Avenue. Lots of people out tonight. The phone number is 312-981-7200. We were going to have Roy Leonard on. We can't seem to get a hold of him, so we hope everything is cool, and we'll talk to him maybe next week. So after 10 o'clock, we're going to do our regular stuff, Drunks in the News, brought to you by the greatest restaurant on the planet, the Gale Street Inn. We got Nick D's Show Spies and Straight Out of Context. And then after 10:30, we got a ton of catching up to do. We haven't had movie reviews on in a couple of weeks, so Eric and Colin, we got a lot of catching up to do. Tons of movies to talk about tonight. The phone number is 312-981-7200. In honor of the fact that Craig Ferguson is finalizing a talk show deal with Tribune Media to start in the fall of 2015, so he'll be gone for less than a year from the talk show world, but he'll be back, and it'll be like 6 p.m., a half-an-hour talk show with the great Craig Ferguson, the best talk show host on the air, who hosts the best late-night show easily. He'll be back, and I hope he brings his gay robot skeleton sidekick, Jeff Peterson, with him, and Secretariat. I hope they come with him. I know that Michael Natus is producing it. He's going to be the line producer, and in fact, Michael Natus is my connection with the Ferguson Show, and so he'll be working on it as well, which is great news. So I thought I would open up the phone lines and have you guys call in with your favorite talk show hosts and guests, too. Like, who's a great guest? Guaranteed. Whenever you see this person on the talk show, you know, guest list, you go, I got to watch it. Doesn't matter what it is.
If I could slip in my pick for great talk show guests, one guy who kills every time he's on Letterman and Conan, Norm MacDonald.
Oh, man.
Yes.
Norm MacDonald rules. No, Esmeralda, by the way, you are a sidekick.
I guess I am.
You're a co-host on it. Now, when was the last time you and Brendan did one?
Oh, my gosh. It's been a very long time.
Yeah. Well, tell everybody
there
what I'm talking
be one.
About.
It's a talk show, but we podcast it.
Yeah.
But it is a live talk show. We do it at a bar called Hungry Brain.
I was lucky enough to be a guest one
night. You were.
Yeah.
And so
it's Brandon Weatherby, by the way.
Yes. And it's like a, you know, like a late night talk show. We got the three guests. We got a host, a co-host, does a monologue.
Yeah. Music.
We do everything. Comedian, music.
Yeah. It's really great. And you can catch it. It's called You, Me, Them, Everybody.
Yes.
You, Me, Them, Everybody.
We should be doing one in October.
Here in Chicago?
Yes.
Oh, that'd be great. Very, very cool. It's a lot of fun. It was fun being a guest, too. So Norm MacDonald is your choice?
I love Norm MacDonald.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Especially, he doesn't tell a joke.
Yeah.
But anything, like he'll try to tell a joke and anybody else would just be horrible.
Did you,
he can somehow make it
did
hilarious.
You see the? Did you see the footage of the episode of Conan that he was on when he had already been interviewed, so he was down on the couch? You know, he was on the
other. Oh, and it was
Courtney Thorne-Smith,
yes.
Who was in chairman of the board.
And I think I remember seeing that when it came out that night.
Have you seen that, Dan?
Oh, yeah.
Can you find the audio for that?
Yeah,
look
absolutely.
It up on YouTube. Let's play that because it's absolutely hilarious. Yeah, I love Norm MacDonald. I love the fact that he, you know, one of the big bosses, the reason he got fired from SNL is because he kept making OJ jokes, you know, like for like 2 years after the trial and everything. And one of the big muckety mucks at NBC was really good friends with OJ and warned, you know, Lauren, you know, if this guy continues to make OJ jokes, he's gone. And he would not stop. Lauren was like, I'm warning you, man. You know, you're treading on thin ice. And every single weekend update, he would do an OJ joke. And that's what got him fired.
He's the nicest guy, too. I met him once. And it was funny because he goes, hi, I'm Norm. I'm like, yeah, no.
Yeah, I know who you are. all right. Let's while Dan is looking for that audio, let's talk to John on WGN. Hi, John.
Yeah, good evening. I'm glad you brought up Don Rickles.
Oh.
I tell you what, years ago, do you remember the Millionaires Club?
Oh, absolutely. Right by the Golf Mill or right around the Golf Mill area?
Golf Mill. Yeah. Golf in Milwaukee.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, a friend of mine was a manager there, and I used to go every once in a while, especially when he worked. And he told me this great story about Rickles. He says, when people, they would line up, you know, to wait to get in to see Rickles. And he says all the minorities, no matter what they were given access to the first three rows. And I says, well, why is that? You know, I pay the same price. He says, you'll see.
Yeah, you'll see.
And you know, God bless Don Rickles. He's 88 years old.
Yeah.
I love him. I would, if he's on, if I'm cruising the TV and CPO Sharky comes on, I watch it.
Yeah.
He was on Gilligan's Island. He's been all over the place.
Yeah.
But you know what? When the day he goes, like I took it hard with Robin Williams because he made everybody laugh.
Yeah.
When Rickles goes, it's gonna hit me hard.
Well, it's the end of an era. He's the last of a breed. You know what I mean, John?
He is. And I tell you what. One more thing. The second best comedian stand up I ever saw was Steve Martin. His early years.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay,
he
John.
Dominated.
He did. I saw him.
Tickets than anybody over a 5-year period.
I saw him in like the late 70s, and he filled up the amphitheater. The amphitheater was sold out. It was crazy.
Oh my God. Yeah. He just endless. And you talk about a crazy man.
Yeah.
Genius.
All right, John. Thanks.
Thank you.
Have a good one. All right. Did we have the audio, Dan?
Yeah, I got it here.
Okay.
It's about 4 minutes. So.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Okay. You know what? Let's do it after the news.
Okay.
Hang on to it. Let's do it after the news. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're talking about your favorite talk shows and your favorite talk show guests, and all that cool stuff. You know, one of the things that I love the most I loved Carnac when Johnny would do Carnac, just brilliant. And the way that Ed McMahon fed him during that bit was genius, absolutely genius. And I loved Carnac, and mm-hmm. I loved anytime the Joan Embry would bring animals on.
Yeah.
Classic.
How about The Little Theater, the movie?
Well, Art Fern.
Art Fern's movie.
With Carol Wayne, when you bring out Carol
yes.
Wayne. Yes.
Yeah, well, not just her, but the titles.
Oh, yeah.
And who was starring in each movie?
And he would go through them.
And the cast would change. It's the same movie.
Take the road to the Slauson Cutoff. Get out of the car, cut off your Slauson.
Or the fork in the road. He would flip the car.
He'd flip a thing,
down,
it'd be a fork.
And there's a
genius. Hilarious. But yeah, I don't know. There was just something when I was a kid. Carnac was just that was the deal for me. That would make me laugh.
Yeah.
Even now as an adult, I'll go online and I'll go on YouTube and I'll just watch like 5 hours of Carnac.
Classic.
And Ed McMahon, just hilarious.
The perfect foil.
Oh yeah, I mean, this people. I think people underestimate
mm-hmm.
the contribution that he made to that show, but particularly that bit.
Yeah,
the Carnac bit.
Exactly.
Genius. All right, we got to take a break. We got the news coming up. Afterwards, we'll do our regular features: Drunks in the News, Straight Out of Context, all that stuff, and we will hear that great audio of Norm Macdonald on the Conan O'Brien show with Courtney Thorne Smith as the guest. Quick break here. News next. Yeah. Nick DiGilio here. Hi. We are live in the Allstate Showcase studio, looking out at Michigan Avenue on a busy Saturday night. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. That's also the number to use for texts. You can check us out at Facebook. Best way to stay connected, though, with over 10,000 other fans is at facebook.com/NickDShow. So like us there. We've got our regular stuff coming up here. Drunks in the News, brought to you by the greatest restaurant on the planet, the Gale Street Inn in Jefferson Park. And we'll do that. And we've got Straight Out of Context and Nick D Show Spies coming up. And we'll tell you how you can be a part of those bits that we do here on WGN on the show. But before the news, we were talking about our favorite talk show guests and our favorite talk show hosts and all that kind of stuff in honor of Craig Ferguson announcing that they are finalizing a deal with Tribune Media for him to have a new half-hour syndicated talk show. So I couldn't be more thrilled because of that news. So before the news, we were talking about Esmeralda and Dan are particularly fond of Norm Macdonald. And there was this really great appearance that he made on Conan O'Brien some years back. And he was the first guest, and Courtney Thorne Smith was the second guest. And while Conan was interviewing Courtney Thorne Smith, it came up that she was in the new Carrot Top movie. She was in the new Carrot Top movie, chairman of the board. And they knew that Norm couldn't resist, you know, just ripping it apart. So here, listen to this. This is from Conan O'Brien.
I want to talk to you about something, because this came up earlier in the show accidentally, because I didn't know what Norm was going to talk about tonight, and it's best sometimes if I don't know. But he mentioned Carrot Top. You are making a movie with Carrot Top, right?
I made a movie with Carrot Top.
Okay. You made a movie with Carrot Top. It's not out yet.
No, it's not.
Can you put the picture
yet.
Up of Carrot Top again just so we can all see him? Oh, there it is again. Yeah. All right. Okay.
Wait a minute. She left Melrose Place to do a movie with Carrot Top?
That's where I'm going, my friend. This begs the question. Now, why a movie with Carrot Top?
Why a movie with Carrot Top?
I mean, no, I don't know much about Carrot Top, you know? I don't know much about him. I'm a little jealous because he's a red-haired comedian, and I felt like maybe you'd do a movie with me first, then move on to Carrot Top, then to Ralph Mal from Happy Days. You know, sort of the three. There's an order in which you do movies with the redheads. What's he like, first of all?
He's extraordinarily sweet.
Nice guy.
He really is. And mm-hmm. he worked very hard, and he was adorable.
And he works with a lot of props and stuff, too, right?
Not in the movie.
Oh, in the movie they took his props away?
They took his props away.
That's a bad time to suddenly take away everything you know about comedy. You know, you've been using props now all your life for comedy. Now we're going to take them away when you make your first movie. Was he okay, though, with it? He was cool?
He was great. He did a wonderful job.
Do you have a scene where you and him embrace?
Yeah, lots of making out.
Oh, for God's sake.
Nothing but making out.
All right.
It's like 9.5 weeks, but Carrot Top. We were doing.
Wow. I got to check out that movie.
Is it called 9.5 seconds? Fucking premature ejaculator.
We got it.
You know what happened? This is what happened. You know what happened? He said 9.5 seconds, and I'm looking at him because I know there's more. And I wait and wait, and I see the glimmer in the eye, and then bang! I thought you were going to crack whore, but no. But what's the movie going to be called?
Well,
really?
I know what it's going to be called.
Yeah, what's that?
If it's got Carrot Top in it, you know what a good name for it would be?
What's that, Norm?
Box Office Poison.
She's in it.
What about my career?
Courtney Thorne Smith, the girl sitting to your left, is in the movie.
I'm going
to
go see it for fun.
Everybody else away?
No, I love this girl. I'd see any movie with this girl in. She's a beautiful lady and a talented, nice talk show guest.
Okay. As evidenced by her appearance on our rival show. All right, well, there's this 2-hour season finale of Melrose Place. There's this movie coming out.
Yes.
Title undetermined at this point.
Chairman of the Board.
Oh, all right. Do something with that, you freak.
I bet the board is spelled B-O-R-E-D.
Oh, my God. That's how you kill on a talk show right there, man. That's how you do it. I bet it's spelled B-O-R-E-D. That's awesome. All right. Yeah. So you know what time it is. This is the time when we take all the real stupid drunk stories of real stupid drunk people doing real stupid drunk stuff. We read them, we vote on them, and we call it Drunks in the News. Drunks in the News. Brought to you by the greatest restaurant on the planet, the Gale Street Inn in Jefferson Park. Go to Gale Street Inn, eat. I guarantee you a great meal and a good time. Great staff. George Karzis, who runs the place, is the king. We have a reader named Roy in Chicago, and he's going to be our drunk reader. Now, if you want to be a drunk reader to read a story on the show, and on top of that, you get yourself a $25 gift card to the greatest restaurant on the planet, the Gale Street Inn. Find a link to a funny drunk story and send it to Dan. That's dlong@wgnradio.com. D-L-O-N-G. dlong@wgnradio.com. Say, Dan, I'd like to read this on the air. He'll contact you. You'll read it on the air, and you get the gift card. Let's get to it. Yeah. Drunk number one. Drunk number one. An Asheboro man claims he was locked inside of a store after police found him in the next morning standing at the front doors of the Just Save. Michael Starkey said he went into the store located on Fayetteville Street Thursday night to use the bathroom. However, after he finished, he returned, but no one was inside the store. Police asked Starkey why he didn't call 911, but he said he did not know. But police say surveillance video painted a very different picture of what happened. Apparently, Starkey grabbed a box of cookies and then went to the bathroom to hide out. After the business closed, Starkey ate all the food off the shelf, grabbed some beers, and soda to drink. Police say they also show the video he was smoking cigarettes inside the store. Starkey also filled his pockets with sunglasses, candy bars, display cell phones, and prepaid cards. He was arrested, drunk, and placed in the Randolph County Jail. They got nothing nice to say to me. Drunk number two. A Washington woman who was wearing a short dress and no underwear is faced with indecent exposure charge after allegedly, quote-unquote, humping lawn chairs, exposing herself to a woman and two children, and urinating in public. Sela Hans, 33, was arrested earlier this month by cops responding to a report of an intoxicated female exposing herself and urinating on the lawn of a Seattle residence. A female witness told officers that Hans had come onto her lawn and was humping her lawn chairs. The woman added that she and her two children, aged 15 and 11, watched Hans' late afternoon performance from a window in their home. After grinding on the lawn chairs, she allegedly exposed her vagina and then smacked her genitals with her hand multiple times. Additionally, the witnesses reported that Hans relieved herself on the lawn and bent over and exposed her bottom. Cops who confronted Hans reported that she was extremely intoxicated and displaying erratic humor. She was wearing a short dress with no underwear, noted Nicholas Olson, who is an officer who arrested her for indecent exposure and public intoxication. Come out of the house. Drunk number three. A woman was arrested on a Florida beach on Friday after exposing herself. What the hell's going on? After exposing herself. An officer said that Megan Fowler, 26, was revealing too much on the Cocoa Beach. Fowler was found walking along the sand with her breasts exposed and her jean shorts falling low enough below her waist to expose herself. She was arrested for public intoxication and indecent exposure. And then she was so nice. Drunk number four. Drunk number four is Roy. He's in Chicago, and he's our drunk reader. Drunk number four. Teach your children well.
Their father's hell did slowly go by. Arizona math teacher arrives drunk to class and keeps drinking. An Arizona math teacher arrived drunk at her high school and hit the bottle again in the classroom, where she yelled at her students before one of the pupils alerted administrators, authorities said on Thursday. Kathleen Jardine, 57, a teacher at Poston Butte High School, faces one count of public consumption of alcohol stemming from the incident on Wednesday in the community about 30 miles southeast of Phoenix, said Sergeant Pat Ramirez, a spokesman for the Pinal County Sheriff's Office. Ramirez said a student called the main office to alert them that Jardine appeared drunk and was yelling at the students. An on-site sheriff's deputy responded, and he could tell she was, quote, extremely intoxicated, unquote, police said. Later, a school security officer found in her classroom a half bottle of vodka, an empty single-serving bottle of white wine, and a half-empty bottle of an orange drink, police added. The teacher eventually admitted that she had been drinking the night before, that morning, and during lunch in her classroom. Jardine's blood alcohol level was 0.205% when tested, which would be considered so-called super extreme if she were to drive under the influence of that much alcohol, police said. She also acknowledged taking a taxi to school and said it was because she felt too drunk to drive. But Jardine may not have had a choice about whether to drive. Her car was impounded on Tuesday in the Phoenix suburb of Gilbert, where she was cited and released for driving under the influence, said Gilbert police spokesman Sergeant Jesse Sanger. Jardine could not immediately be reached for comment. Learning math can be hard enough, but I can't imagine trying to learn it from a drunk teacher, said Pinal County Sheriff Paul Bebeau in a statement. This is not the first time Jardine was drunk in the classroom, as she was fired for such behavior while teaching in New Mexico in 2011, Bebeau said. In addition to the public consumption of alcohol charge, Jardine also could face a charge of disorderly conduct stemming from the incident. Officials from the Florence Unified School District, in a statement, declined to release further details about the teacher or the incident.
All right. The ladies have dominated this week's Drunks in the News. All right, we got a vote. We've got the woman who was walking around on the beach topless. After, by the way, she only had three shots of vodka, according to the statement. We've got the guy who broke into the store and ate a bunch of food and drank a bunch of beer while the store was closed. We've got the woman teacher who was drunk in school. And we've got the woman who was arrested after humping lawn chairs and exposing herself. Let's go through the room here. Dan?
I have to go with the teacher who was so drunk she took a cab to work, had alcohol in the classroom, and it was her second job that she was found drunk at work.
Yeah.
She's gone through two teaching jobs.
Yeah, sometimes it's tough. Your job is tough, so you got to have a couple of bolts. All right, Roger?
It is a tough job. I got through it without drinking, though. What her level was what? Super extreme?
Something like that.
Yeah.
0.205.
Yeah, they call it a super extreme drunk.
Yeah.
Anyone who has the desire to go that high has got to get my vote.
All right. And Esmeralda, what do you think? What was your favorite?
I like that she was responsible and actually went to work.
Actually go to work. You got to give her some points for that.
I got to go to work.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like that one.
Okay. I like the woman who humped the lawn chairs, quite frankly, but this is a democracy and we have a winner. And Roy, you got yourself a $25 gift card to the greatest restaurant on the planet, the Gale Street Inn. We're going to break, and when we come back, it's time for Straight Out of Context and Nick D Show Spies. Same bat channel, same bat time next week for Drunks in the News. Brought to you by the greatest restaurant on the planet, the Gale Street Inn. Yeah.
F-bomb.
All right, you know what this is. This is Straight Out of Context. This is when you listen to the radio station 24-7, whenever anybody says something that you can pull out of context and it sounds dirty, jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to DLong at WGNradio.com. It's got to be dirty, and it's got to be funny. All right, so let's check it out. What do we got?
Nine today.
All right.
First up from Carol, it's Craig Collins.
I got my berries. That's all I'm worried about.
Okay.
Next up from Eric O., Mary Vandeveld.
Make it a big one.
Okay.
Next from Bob and Mary Ann's producer, Ann, it's Bob Surratt.
That's about all I have, 7 seconds.
Okay, next.
This one from Cherry Bomb Boom, it's Bob and Mary Ann.
I like the sticky stuff, too.
No, I love the sticky stuff during the day.
Oh, God. Oh, God. All right. Next.
Next from Bob Ferguson, it's Judy Markey.
I always take it inch by inch.
Oh, Judy. Okay, next.
All right, from Kristen Decker.
Decker.
John Williams.
Don't worry, Decker measured me, and I'm 9.3 inches. So
oh, cool. Man! Oh, I believe we have a winner, folks.
Hall of Fame.
Oh, my God.
That's Hall of Fame stuff.
Thank you, Decker. I love you. Okay, next.
Next from Kristen Decker. It's John Williams.
Oh, God.
I'm sorry. The ladies just get screwed in every public facility.
What's going on middays? What's happening? Okay, next.
Finally, from Larry, Ashley, Katie, and Decker, it's John Williams.
Oh, my God.
My wiener is up, but I'm not sure if it's working.
What are they smoking during the day?
I don't even know what to say,
oh,
man.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, man. All right. I was out with Decker last night. She told me that there were some buttes that were coming our way.
Oh, yeah,
so.
Definitely.
All right, Nick D Show Spies. This is when you listen 24-7 whenever somebody mentions me or the show in any capacity. Jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to DLong at WGNradio.com. What do we got?
Two this week.
Okay.
First up from Wild Bill, it's Patty Vasquez.
By the way, I ended up out of context. And you know who submitted me? Bob Ferguson. When I was talking about...
Yeah, he does that.
That was really funny. It was, and it was such a nice one, too. It was a very... It was actually very... I said I could go forever when I was younger.
Right.
When I was talking about being able to swim across the lake. I kind of like that one. That's like the most like gentle out of context, I think.
Yeah, that's really not so bad.
On Nick DiGilio's show, it's fun to listen. And
right.
See, like, as usually, it's like I'm shoving something in something.
You know, I think you're going to make out of context tonight.
Something's being banged. Something's being hammered.
I'm sending all these to Nick right now.
I'm putting things in my mouth. We'll see what happens after this.
Okay. All right. Not a care. Okay. And next.
Finally, from Aaron, it's Bob and Mary Ann.
Okay.
My name is Bob. I am a narcissist.
Okay. I got you on tape now. Proof. It's true.
I'm going to use
that against you.
Before we let you go, Lyle, I read with great interest this little note you sent us.
By the way, I think Nick DiGilio needs that one.
Which one?
Bob. I'm a narcissist.
Oh, he plays the out of context stuff? Is that Nick who does that? What does he call that?
Out of context, I think.
Is that it?
I think.
Well, believe me, he'll get that. I thought you were calling him a narcissist.
No, he's not a narcissist. You are.
Bob has no idea I work at this station. I'm absolutely convinced that Bob has no clue that I have a radio
show.
That's
not the first time he's done that.
No, he's like, who does that? What? What's it called? Huh?
I'm confused by why it would be out of context.
That's not out of context. I don't know what Marion is thinking. That's not out of context. He said, I am a narcissist. That's in full context, and there's nothing dirty or funny about
it. Right.
I don't think she gets the gig, man. Well, they don't even know I'm here.
It's past their bedtime, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, they could be listening now.
Well, no, it's
They're
after
not.
10.
Are
no.
you kidding? Are you kidding? Like Bob Surratt would listen to my show? Give me a break. All right. Well, there you go. That's it.
Spies. Like us. Like us. Like us. Like us. Spies. Like us. Like us.
All right. Keep your radios on. Somebody says something dirty, pull it out of context. Somebody mentions me or the show. That's Nick D. Show Spies. The email address to remember is dlong@wgnradio.com. The news is next. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Studios, the Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. We're here till midnight tonight, as usual. The phone number is 312-981-7200. You can check us out at Twitter, but the best way to stay connected is our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/NickDShow. And now, I haven't been on in the past couple of weeks. 2 weeks ago, I wasn't on because the Cubs game went late. And last week, I was off because I was at the Flashback Weekend Convention, Horror Convention, which was an absolute blast. So as a result, Colin and Eric and I have not reviewed movies in a couple of weeks. So we've got a lot of catching up to do. We're going to do this week's movies in the on-demand stuff, but we want to do some catching up first. Colin Suter and Eric Childress, eFilmCritic.com, join me every week. And here's Colin. Hi, Colin.
Hello there.
And Eric. Hi, Eric.
Hello.
All right. How you guys doing?
Good.
Very well.
All right. Cool. So we've not been on, and by the way, we're going to catch up on some movies from a couple of weeks ago as well. I didn't see anything last week because from pretty much Friday all the way through till Sunday, I was at the convention. So I missed.
It was a good week to take off.
Yeah, I missed everything. Yeah. So let's go and talk a little bit about, Colin, why don't you handle Into the Storm? Eric, did you see it?
I did not yet.
Okay. Colin, Into the Storm, or as we like to know it, I liked it better when it was called Twister.
Yeah, well, that's pretty accurate. But this is sort of a found footage film, sort of not. Basically, there are multiple storylines going on, and they're all centered around this major tornado that's, you know, making its way towards a small town. There's a team of storm chasers who have the most, you know, advanced technology, and they have a vehicle that has cameras mounted everywhere, and the head of that operation is a bit of an egomaniac who's, you know, willing to put other people's lives at stake so he can get the best footage of a big tornado.
Is Philip Seymour Hoffman driving the vehicle?
No.
Okay.
No, there's a no-name cast on this one.
Well, actually, the girl from Walking Dead is in it, though. The girl from Walking Dead's in it.
Okay, yeah. So there's that. And there's a storyline involving teenagers who get trapped in a basement. Another teenager whose dad is a vice principal at his school, and they get caught up with the storm chasers. So, you know, all these little storylines sort of converge. The best subplot involves these two sort of jackass daredevil hillbillies who are, you know, cheerfully moronic and fancy themselves storm chasers, even though all they have is a little stupid little mini cam. And I like these characters the best because they sort of act as the film's one and true audio commentary track for the DVD. They're basically, you know, they sort of act as, they're basically there to say, you know, any idiot can run after a storm and film it. And if it weren't for those two characters, I might not have enjoyed this movie quite as much. Although the storm sequences themselves are actually pretty thrilling, I think. And it helps that I'm kind of a sucker for that stuff. And that's basically the only reason for going to see this. It's an incredibly dumb film. Much like my guilty pleasure of last year, Getaway, you will find yourself asking a lot of logical questions about stupid things that are going on. Like, why would anyone need to mount a camera on the side of their car so that they can film their tires, you know? It's one of those stupid found footage gimmicks that just makes you go, wait, why would anybody put a camera there? But it's also a problem with this film is that it can't decide if it's a found footage film or not. So stylistically, it's a bit of a confused mess, but it's a film you can laugh at and laugh with. And it might be my guilty pleasure of the summer.
Okay. All right, fair enough. That's kind of what I thought it was going to be, judging from the trailers. I know a lot of people hate Twister. I happen to be a big fan of Twister.
I am too, and you know, that's exactly what this movie is sort of operating on. Like, Twister's not a movie I watch and take seriously.
No.
It's just really thrilling and stupid and kind of fun.
And it's got Bill Paxton in it, for God's sake.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it's got Bill Paxton. It's got a good cast. This does not have a good cast. This is a bad cast. But still, it's, it's on the...
Did we lose Eric?
You could do a heck of a lot worse.
Okay, I think
we'll discuss a heck of a lot worse later on.
I think we lost Eric. Can we call Eric back? I don't see him on the screen. So I think
I'm hearing myself echo in my phone. I don't know if that's...
It's not coming across on the air. You sound fine on the air.
Okay, good.
So we're getting Eric back. He'll be back in a second. Okay, so Into the Storm, guilty pleasure.
Yeah, very much so.
All right, cool. All right, let's move on. And I believe we have Eric. He's back. Hey, Eric, what happened, man?
I don't know. Phone just dropped out.
Okay, cool.
Weird.
Well, you're back.
I am.
Colin said that it was kind of a guilty pleasure for Into the Storm. So
yeah, I heard that. That was the last thing I heard.
Okay, cool. All right, well, let's go back to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Again, didn't see it, and I know you guys have. Eric, let's talk a little bit about this one.
Okay, well, this is the latest attempt to reboot this franchise for the big screen.
Oh, and by the way, it dropped 68% from last week.
Yes.
For it's Friday.
As expected.
And
it's still going to be number one this week.
And the Expendables tanked yesterday.
Bomb.
Yeah.
Bomb alert.
Okay. All right. Go ahead.
Yeah. So the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles rebooted this thing. We got there was the trilogy back in the early 90s with the guys in the rubber suits. Then you have the cartoon reboot from 2007 that not a whole lot of people saw. And now you got this one, and this one is full-blown CGI with the turtles, and, we don't really need to get into too much of the plot here. It's basically a start over the whole series with Megan Fox playing the reporter April O'Neil, who comes in contact with the turtles who have been cooped up in the sewers for many years learning their ninja skills. And want to unleash them on the crime that's taking hold of the city. So there's not a whole lot of plot here, and there's really not a whole lot of movie either. The thing that this thing is really missing, the film in 1990, the first film that came out, was relatively successful because it managed to find sort of the right balance in the tone. Of a ridiculous premise, a premise that in the comics started off as a goof and has turned into, you know, this billion-dollar franchise, basically. And that movie, that first one, had sort of a joy to it. There was sort of a joy in the way that the Jim Henson films, like The Dark Crystal and The Labyrinth, had a little bit of that with the joy of the guys running around in the rubber suits. And here you have these CGI creations, and not one of the turtles, with the exception of the Mikey character who's constantly hitting on April O'Neil, none of them are distinguishable from one another. It is an absolute manic mess of a film. Some of the worst CGI of the year when not involving the turtles. action sequences that are just nonsensical, plot that is completely stupid. It's not funny. It's not exciting. It is awful filmmaking from top to bottom. And I don't understand how anyone is still interested in these characters. I don't get it. Colin, maybe you know.
Okay, Colin, go ahead, man.
I don't know. I mean, I'm not. I never had any sort of attachment to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, one way or the other. I thought the movies were, you know, in the early '90s were, you know, passable at best. I didn't really care.
I like the secret. I like the Secret of the Ooze. I remember.
I remember liking that one the most of the three. But I still, you know, like, I don't care. I guess it makes sense to bring them out for a new generation. I guess there's some appeal to it, but I'm not entirely with Eric. I mean, I don't think the movie's very good, but actually there's one action sequence that I thought was quite enjoyable, which involves an avalanche. I thought that was pretty cool. But the thing is, like, you know, this was produced by Michael Bay, and it may as well be a Michael Bay film in that he seems to have this fetish now for the climactic action sequence taking place on a skyscraper. I think he's got a weird thing now with skyscrapers just tumbling down, or, you know, the spires on the top tumbling down and putting our heroes at the top of it and, you know, watching them basically fall to the ground. You know, because that's basically what this movie does. It basically recreates, you know, all the stupid crap we've been seeing in the Transformers movies lately. So it definitely lacks a personality to it. And, you know, other than, like I said, the action sequence that I kind of enjoyed, there's really no reason to.
Okay. All right. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I'm not surprised by those reviews.
Yeah.
At all. All right.
I think we are either.
Okay. Well, let's hand it over to Colin. Colin, I am so excited to find out what you thought of Step Up All In.
Yeah.
Because I know how you feel.
All in, baby.
I know how you feel about the Step Up movies, which I am fascinated by. So tell us about Step Up All In.
All right. Well, All In refers to the cast. This is basically the Expendables 3 of Step Up movies, except that it's good. Oh, wait. I'm sorry. We're not supposed to tip our hat yet for that. Almost all the characters from all the other Step Up movies. No Channing Tatum in this, by the way.
I was going to say, they didn't get Channing Tatum, though.
No, they did not get Channing Tatum.
Okay.
They all return for this, and basically they're all going to be part of one big dance group that's going to compete in this Las Vegas show to have their own dance show in Las Vegas. And it's all going to be broadcast on television, too. And there's sort of the host of this thing is sort of like right out of a Hunger Games, you know, the way I think that's what they were going for with her look and her mannerisms, you know, this kind of ringmaster of the whole thing. And there's a subplot involving that and how it's rigged and all that. Again, just like the Ninja Turtles, there's not much point in going into the whole story of this.
Yeah.
All the characters are back, including Moose, who's, you know, the kid with the frizzy hair that shows up in all these movies. The one through line for the whole Step Up series, the one character that's managed to make it all the way through the whole franchise. And, you know, my review for this probably won't surprise you that much, that this is really a dumb, fun movie that is very consistent with the rest of the franchise. You know, it's a cliche-ridden storyline. The characters, you know, these aren't actors. These are dancers first and actors, you know, a very distant second. So the acting is, you know, wooden, as you'd expect. But the reason people are going to see this movie are the dance scenes. And by and large, for the most part, with a couple exceptions, the dance scenes in this movie are pretty great. And one of the reasons why they're pretty great is that the director, who's this is her first film, and she's directed a music video, a very groundbreaking music video that I can't remember, the Okay Go, Here We Go Again.
Oh, okay. All right.
Colin Walker.
Yep.
So she knows how to film a good dance scene. Basically, she takes the John Badham style of filming a dance scene and just basically sits the camera still and lets the dancers do the work. You know, very minimal cutting, nice angles, low to the ground, so you can see the dancers from head to toe. And it's really a lot of fun.
The reason I like the Step Up movies is because they work on a lot of levels. One, they're so bad they're good. They have a guilty pleasure component. They have a nostalgia component. You grew up in the 80s watching the break-in movies and all that. They definitely remind me of those films. And this is what I realized as I was watching this movie. Another reason why I like them is because they're really sweet. Like, they're really just, like, good-natured, really sweet movies. You know, they're not trying to be, you know, anything but what they are, which is, you know, old-fashioned, let's put on a show kind of movies. Every scene is, you know, every conflict is resolved with a dance-off, which I think is fun. There's a couple sequences in this movie that I think they could have done a lot more with that's had, like, really innovative ideas, but they didn't quite do enough with them. But by and large, you know, I recommend this movie just on the pure base level of it's a dumb dance movie. Go for the dancing, enjoy yourself, and you can make fun of the rest of the drama stuff and have fun doing that too, and you won't feel bad about it. Okay. So,
all right. You know. Did you see it in 3D?
I did not see it in 3D, unfortunately. I hear the 3D is very good. And I've seen the other two in 3D, and the 3D in those movies have been good, too. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Colin is a fan of the Step Up movies, y'all.
Yeah, that's right, y'all.
Step Up all in. All right, everybody hang on. We got more movies to talk about. We got a lot of catching up to do. We were off because of a Cub game 2 weeks ago, and I was off because I went to the Flashback convention last week, so we're doing some catch-up. Movie reviews, 312-981-7200 on WGN. Yes, sir. It is movie review time, and we've got some catching up to do. Eric and Colin are with me. It's 312-981-7200. Nick DiGilio here, and let's bring the guys back. Welcome back, gentlemen.
Hello. Thank you.
All right. Eric, tell us about Get On Up.
Okay. This is the biopic about James Brown from director Tate Taylor, who last gave us The Help. Chadwick Boseman, who last played Jackie Robinson in 42, plays James Brown. This is, not your sort of your typical biopic that goes, you know, from sort of the beginning of the story to the end. This movie likes to jump around a lot and give us a sort of a full picture of James Brown's not just his troubled childhood, but a little taste of his troubled late life. And in between a lot of the music, a lot of the great music that made him one of the most influential artists ever. The problem with this movie is exactly the thing that I'm talking about, and that basically is within the structure of this movie. This movie is sort of trying to piece together things within his life to sort of come together with a sort of a grander theme. That it never quite finds or grasps onto. There's a big problem. I have a big problem with the film, sort of really whitewashing around a lot of his personal issues, notably how his treatment of many of his wives are concerned. There's only one time in the movie where any sort of domestic violence is even hinted at, and it's actually done off screen with the sound of a slap, and that's really unfortunate. And then on top of that, the movie doesn't really want to get into the sort of the nuts and bolts of what made the music great and what really sort of catapulted James Brown to want to create the music that he did. The movie sort of really kind of, you know, goes from, you know, like he's having a troubled hot childhood, and then all of a sudden he hears some people here singing in a prison, and then all of a sudden we know he's got a good voice. So the movie never really finds a through line because it keeps jumping back and forth in time to points, almost random sometimes, that the movie never really connects on an emotional level
let alone giving you a real great sense of who this man was. Chadwick Boseman does everything he can with the role. I think he's really good. The first moment he steps onto the screen, he is James Brown right up until the very end. But it's about the only thing in this movie keeping it afloat, which I think is a real mess.
Colin.
Yeah, I'm not quite with Eric on this one, although I don't think the movie, I don't recommend the movie, but I think there's, I think the movie does find its theme. I think it's pretty, you know, pretty clear. I think the movie is about a guy who basically felt he didn't, he made it known to everybody around him that he didn't need them until the end when he figured out he didn't have anybody and that he really did need them. I think that's the story that the movie wants to tell. Unfortunately, like Eric said, the movie does so in such a strange structure that at one hand I want to admire because it's different from the usual Cradle to Grave stuff. On the other hand, it just doesn't work. It just kind of just jumps around a little too much that he just that everything kind of gets lost in the mix. So, and again, Chadwick Boseman, great performance. Unfortunately, I think the movie is just a bit misdirected, and you know, it's unfortunate. So, not quite as down on it as Eric, but yeah, still can't really recommend it.
I'm a little bit more on Eric's side on this one. I thought the structure was an absolute mess, and I do agree with you, Eric. I think it is whitewashed. You can't make a James Brown movie about James Brown and rate it PG-13. That's just not.
No.
That shouldn't happen. So I'm echoing everything that you said, Eric. I'm with you. I think I'm with you 100% on this. But I gotta say, this Chadwick Boseman is good, man. He's great, and it reminded me. And you guys, I'll explain in a second. It reminded me of Chaplin, in that Robert Downey Jr. was unbelievably great in that movie not so good. And that's how I feel about this. I would almost recommend this movie just to see this guy's performance. Because he's electric. He's really great in it. But it's just a mess. I think the movie's an absolute mess. I can't recommend it. But he's good, man. This guy's a good actor. And he's great as James Brown. So, all right, you guys, hang on. We got the news, okay?
Right.
Hold on. We got Eric. We got Colin. And we got the news coming up next on 720 WGN. Nick DiGilio here on WGN. Hi. It's me. Hey, we are here until midnight. We're live in the Allstate Showcase studio on WGN here, 720 WGN. And we're reviewing the movies as we always do, but we had some catching up to do. We missed a couple of weeks here. So welcome back, guys.
Hello.
Yeah, I'm a little distracted, Eric, because What Lies Beneath is on TV right now.
Oh, yeah. You got it from here, Nick. Go ahead and watch.
I love that movie, and I don't care what anybody says. Okay. Colin, tell us about, and you have not seen The 100-Foot Journey, correct, Eric?
I have not.
Neither have I. Colin, tell us about The 100-Foot Journey.
Okay. Well, this is the story of an Indian family who moved to a small village in France to open up an Indian restaurant. And the oldest son is becoming quite an accomplished chef, and you know their plan is to bring the finest Indian cuisine to the village. And the problem is they've opened up their restaurant across the street from one of France's finest restaurants, which is owned by Helen Mirren. So there's conflict. One restaurant plots to make sure that the other one doesn't have key ingredients by buying it all up at all the farmers' markets in town. That sort of thing, you know. So these two restaurant owners are, you know, clashing. But eventually, the young chef at the Indian restaurant becomes noticed by Helen Mirren and her crew, and he sort of wins her over. And next thing he knows, he's being lured into being her student, her cooking student, so that he can become world renowned and, you know, flee the nest.
you know, being his parents' restaurant. So this is from Lasse Holmström. And for people who don't know, he directed Cider House Rules, Chuck-a-Lot, My Life as a Dog, and a lot of other movies that take place in charming little towns where, you know, populated by eccentric locals. So you pretty much know what you're getting when you go into one of his films. And this is your typical Lasse Holmström film. You know, there's a romantic subplot, you know, between the two young characters. You know, nothing ever gets too mean-spirited. Everything is just very nice. And, you know, we as film critics, we often get asked by people, you know, is there anything nice I can go see? Is there anything that doesn't have blood and guts and, you know, gross-out humor and, you know, people getting shot at all? I just want to see something nice and pleasant. Well, this is your movie. And that's not to say anything negative about it. It's not a bad film. It's very, you know, Helen Mirren, of course, you know, one of our best actresses, and she's great in it. The cast is good. You know, there's really, this is a movie that means no harm. And that's kind of a weird way to put it, but it's not going to get under your skin. It's not going to make you like laugh out loud or anything. But, it's, you know, it's a pleasant night out. And if nothing else, the movie will make you very hungry. I'm going to have to remember this movie at the end of the year when we make our subtitle list, you know, our subcategory list. This is the movie that made me the hungriest so far this year.
You haven't seen The Trip to Italy yet, obviously, then.
I have not. I'm going to see it maybe Monday. Okay. So I'm definitely looking forward to that, and I'm sure there'll be some close competition there.
Yep.
But no, this is, you know, this is a nice, pleasant 3-star film for people who are looking for that sort
okay.
of thing.
All right, you know, Lasse Hallström's interesting case because he's made some really great movies.
Absolutely.
I mean, What's Eating Gilbert Grape? Once Around is a great movie. The Hoax is a great movie. And then every once in a while, he'll do something like, "What are you doing, man?"
Right.
You know, like,
yeah.
Like the shipping, the shipping news and.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, this is not. Yeah, this isn't as bad as Shipping News. I think it's better than Cider House Rules. I wasn't a fan of that movie. And I think it's sort of like on the level of Chuck-a-Lot, you know, which is it's a fine, okay, decent film.
Right.
You know?
All right. Okay.
It's exactly like that. It's like Chuck-a-Lot.
Okay. That's exactly. You know what? I mean, that review that you just gave is exactly what I thought that movie would be, just having seen the commercials and stuff. So. All right, now the big movie that we had to cover from last week is a couple of weeks ago, actually, came out 2 weeks ago, Guardians of the Galaxy. Eric, tell us about Guardians of the Galaxy.
Okay, well, this is Marvel's sort of big long shot film of the summer and of the year. You had no Captain Americas, no, you know, none of the iconic characters. This is a whole new set of people that people who aren't familiar with the comics, so, you know, I clearly don't have a lot of input into. And the film stars Chris Pratt as Peter Quill, who as a child was abducted from Earth by an alien spacecraft, and then later in life, some years later, basically becomes sort of an intergalactic sort of treasure hunter who comes upon, we'll just call it a mysterious object. That everyone in the universe wants to get their hands on, including the villain who will be in the Avengers sequel next year, who makes a cameo appearance in this movie. Other people after this orb include a lot of people that Peter goes to jail with, including Zoe Saldana's Gamora, Bradley Cooper as a talking raccoon named Rocket.
Yeah.
And Vin Diesel as a tree who only says 3 words throughout the entire film. The same 3 words over and over and over again. In prison, they meet another potential person for their team, played by WWE's or former.
He's still with the WWE. He's on the roster.
Still there, okay.
Yep.
Well, we're referring to Dave Bautista, who plays Drax the Destroyer in the film. And so these sort of this reluctant team sort of eventually put aside their differences to team up and to keep this mysterious object out of the hands of Ronan, played by Lee Pace,
who has very sinister plans for this device for the universe. So what you have here is a film that storyline is very sort of self-aware of itself. It's not going for sort of a lot of the traditional comic book beats about heroes and villains. It's very much in sort of the style of almost a Joss Whedon film, or even like the television series Firefly, in a way, in that it's always sort of poking fun at some of its own cliches, and sort of that not all heroes are aware that they're heroes at the time that they're actually becoming heroes. Obviously, as you've mentioned, this is sort of the story film of the summer, and about a week or so, it's actually going to be the highest grossing film in the U.S. this summer, amazingly enough. And while a lot of people are really praising it to the hilt, I think it's just okay. I think that there are as many flaws as pleasures to be found with this film. More flaws in the first half, and more of its pleasures in the second half. The good stuff, I think Bradley Cooper does tremendous voice work as Rocket Raccoon. I think if you didn't know it was Bradley Cooper, you wouldn't. I think he's absolutely tremendous. I think Dave Bautista is actually quite good in the film. I think he has a pretty good sense of comic timing and really hits a couple of the beats really well. I'm sorry, folks, but Zoe Saldana, I don't care what color she is in the movies. She's just not that interesting a presence. And Chris Pratt, to me, while I really like the guy, there's something to his performance here that almost is a little too self-aware. It seems like he's clearly aware that he's in on the joke, and like he knows he's uttering something funny when he's saying it. There's something about it that didn't quite rise up to the level of, say, Robert Downey Jr. in as Iron Man, or even like Nathan Fillion in Firefly. And then this film really has a severe villain problem. I think Lee Pace, the character of Ronan, is kind of a bore, there's so many other superfluous characters running through this movie, like Benicio del Toro, who was seemed to be set up as a villain in one of the previous outtakes in the Thor sequel, is on screen for like 5 minutes in this movie, and you never quite get a sense of a real sort of threat to the universe that this movie wants to have. So this movie, I was in it, then I was out of it, and in and out of it, back and forth throughout. It's a film that might grow on me, and I'm not going to, I'll be ready for the sequel when it comes out. But I think this movie is just okay at best. I don't think it's the greatest thing that people are given a lot of credit for.
Okay. Colin?
Yeah, I don't think it's the greatest thing either, but I enjoyed it. I've said many times I'm really kind of over the superhero thing. I'm kind of tired of them. But I found myself along for the ride on this one. And I agree, Eric, in the first half, maybe not so much the half, but the first half hour for me or so was a bit bumpy. I wasn't sure. I thought maybe it was a little too obnoxious, or, trying a little too hard to capture that sort of Joss Whedon cleverness, and it never quite hits it. But as the movie went on, I enjoyed the characters more. I enjoyed their interaction a lot more. I enjoyed their chemistry a lot more. I just sort of like that attitude that the movie has of, none of the characters has the weight of the world on their shoulders. That's sort of the thing that I'm tired of the most with the superhero movies. This movie is just sort of like if Star Wars was told entirely from the point of view of Han Solo. I sort of like that approach to it. I enjoyed the look of this film. I think the art direction is really good. I think the world that they created was very interesting to look at in just about every frame. And with the soundtrack, the mixtape that sort of permeates the whole film, it really reminded me of a PG version of heavy metal. Just it had that kind of attitude towards for the whole thing, minus obviously all the sex. But it has that sort of, laid back sort of attitude towards it that I found quite refreshing for a movie in this genre. It's not great. I mean, like you said, Eric, Zoe Saldana, not much going on there, but I would be okay with seeing a sequel to this movie. I think it's fun.
I loved it. I thought it was great. I laughed my ass off the entire time. I thought it was incredibly entertaining and a lot of fun. It's the kind of comic book movie I like. After all these dark, you know, Nolanized comic book movies, this is the kind of comic book movie I like. I thought the characters were hilarious. You mentioned Bradley Cooper's work as this Rocket. Everything that came out of his mouth was hilarious. And Batista's really good in it. I agree with you on Zoe Saldana. I've never really understood the appeal at all. But I seriously laughed the entire running time of this movie. The audience I saw it with, we were cheering, we were laughing, we had a great time. And I think it's great. I really do. Now, I don't like it as much as the Avengers, you know, but overall, I was incredibly entertained for the entire running time of this movie. And like the characters, I thought the special effects were good. I'm glad you mentioned the soundtrack. The soundtrack is just awesome. And I thought it was great. It was one of the most entertaining movies I've seen during the summer. And I just really highly recommend it. So, all right, you guys, hang on. We got to take a quick break. We got to come back and we'll catch up with we'll start reviewing the stuff that came out this week, coming up right after this on 720 WGN. Yeah, man. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Showcase studio in here till midnight. Colin and Eric are with me. Lots of movies that we had to catch up on. We're all caught up, so we're going to start. You guys, we're going to start with theatrical stuff, and then if we run out of time, I want to make sure we get those in. And so we'll save on demand for last if we got time.
Cool.
All right. Colin.
Yeah.
Tell us about The Expendables 3.
All right. Well, this one starts off with Stallone and Dolph Lundgren and Jason Statham, and they get Wesley Snipes out of jail. Get it? It's a joke because Wesley Snipes was actually in jail. Yeah.
And it's tax evasion.
Yeah, baby. Oh, nice to know you got a sense of humor about it. That's great. Wink, wink. Yeah, I get it. All right. So they're... He joins them so they can chase after another bad guy, this time played by Mel Gibson. And, of course, this film starts off with Stallone wanting to call it quits in this action business, but he and his crew are lured into finding Gibson and whatever evil plan he's got going. And, of course, if you've seen the poster for this film, you know that everyone and their mother has been added to the crew, including a bunch of younger action stars. The list of actors in this thing is way too long to go into, but the one having the most fun being on board with this is Antonio Banderas. That's the thing with this movie is that the actors are having fun, spouting off whatever Stallone written dialogue is given to them. But Banderas is definitely the most animated here. And, Gibson has some funny moments being the villain. And, Schwarzenegger's, always kind of fun to watch anyway. But the thing is like the movie is so crowded with all these characters that there's never any suspense as to, whether or not they're going to get out of this, these situations. I mean, the movie is building up to one big half-hour action climax. With all these fighting forces in this thing, all these characters who have these special fighting, talents, it becomes pretty clear that they're going to get out of this thing relatively pretty easily and pretty unscathed. And that's the problem with this film is that, when you talk about the Expendables movies, a lot of people say, oh, they're fun, they're over the top. This movie I thought was under the top. I kept waiting for it to reach a top to go over. and it never does. It, the action scenes, I think, are really generic. I mean, really just other than one stunt scene, involving a motorcycle going up a ramp, there's really not much here that we haven't seen before in better action movies, you know, many times before. So you got all these extra characters that have been put in here. You'd think they'd get more mileage out of that, but instead it's your run-of-the-mill action movie that really isn't very special in any way, except that it has a large casting, you know, a large roster of action heroes put in it, but not giving them much to do. So, you know, other than a few fun performances, there's really not much going on here. Nothing really to recommend, not even really to action fans.
Okay. All right. Eric and me will give our reviews of this after the news, which is coming up next. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Showcase studio here till midnight. Coming up after midnight, Red Eye Remix with Amy Guth. We are talking movie reviews. We haven't reviewed movies in a couple of weeks on the show because I've been off. So we caught up with some older ones from a couple of weeks back, and now we're in the middle of reviewing a new one. Colin just told us about The Expendables 3. And now, Eric, what did you think of it?
Well, I mean, it may be a run-of-the-mill action film, but I think it's the version of the run-of-the-mill action film that they've been trying to make since the beginning with this series. You know, when this thing was, you know, basically announced, you know, several years ago, and you heard that, you know, you're going to get every action star in the world together for the first time, you know, doing a, you know, sort of a throwback 80s film, you know, and then you ended up with guys like, you know, Terry Crews and Randy Couture. It was a little bit of a disappointment, even as insane as that first movie was. Then they upped it, you know, a little bit in the second one by bringing in Jean-Claude Van Damme as the villain and Chuck Norris for a cameo. But that film was very unevenly paced and, you know, just not very good at all. This one, even though they've gone from R to PG-13, a very hard PG-13, by the way. This is a film that I think they've been trying to make since the beginning. Yes, it's ridiculous. Is it over the top? There are other films, you know, it's not The Raid, okay? The Raid is as over top as they come and also has incredibly, you know, ingenious action sequences. This movie to me was, I just had a blast watching this film. Are the characters, you know, that interesting? No, not really, but they're no less interesting than the characters in the Fast and Furious movies, and this film at least has a couple personalities, namely, as Colin mentioned, Antonio Banderas, who is hilarious in his few scenes in this movie. Mel Gibson, again, another really solid villainous performance, you know, after Machete Kills is the only thing mentioned in that movie, and I think he's really good here as well. Could the movie have gone sort of the full Private Ryan in the last 20 minutes? Sure. Would have been a better movie? Probably. But I didn't mind it. I thought this was the best pace of the three films. I thought it was the most fun of the three films. I mean, you got Harrison Ford in it, you know, getting a moment out of Star Wars. You got Mel Gibson gets behind the wheel of a truck. Schwarzenegger's calling back stuff. You got, you know, everyone Stallone's ever worked with in this movie. I just had fun with this movie. It's not worth defending any more than that, but that's the bottom line for me.
Okay. I thought it was extraordinarily stupid. I'm much more with Colin on this, Eric. I just thought it was, didn't think it was very well directed, didn't think it was very clever or imaginative. Too many people that I don't give a crap about are in this movie. Now, I will agree, I think Antonio Banderas is great. And I think Mel Gibson is really good too. They are a lot of fun to watch, especially Banderas, who is hilarious and easily the best thing in the movie. But I think it's just run of the mill, even less than run of the mill. And I just, you know, they tried to cram so much stuff in there, and there are just, you know, there are actors and actresses in this movie that I just don't care about. They don't do it for me. And, you know, I think Kelsey Grammer has some fun in this movie, too. I don't like these movies. I think all three of them are pretty bad. And this thing is tanking right now. All right. Now, are you surprised at how poorly it did yesterday?
A little bit. I thought, you know, because there's all this stuff going on with the whole piracy issue right now, and now they, you know, the Lionsgate's going to have an excuse that they can point at and say, well, that's why it bombed, of course, because everyone watched it already.
Yeah.
As if, you know, the 2 million downloads that they're referring to, as if all of them were going to go see the movie regardless. You know, they can't really prove that.
Right.
But no, I mean, the grosses, you know, have come down in this. I thought this was going to get a little better bump just for the fact that it added, you know, a few more familiar faces. But, you know, 16 million, under 16 million, that's pretty terrible.
Yeah, that's awful. Really bad. Okay, well, I didn't like it, but let's move on. Eric, tell us about The Giver, which I didn't see, and Colin, you didn't see, right?
Nope, didn't see it.
All right, The Giver.
Okay, well, this is the latest in the sort of, I guess, what is now the young adult dystopian genre. It is based on a 1993 novel, and it stars Brenton Thwaites. He of the Signal and Oculus and Maleficent from earlier this year. And he stars as a teenage boy, you know, set in a future where the past has pretty much all been erased in some form. Memories have been erased. Everyone has taken injections to sort of keep themselves on an even keel so they keep the past behind them, so much so that they don't even see in color. As part of the movie is even in black and white. But when all these kids reach a certain age, their futures are mapped out for them in, you know, very much like Divergent earlier this year. It was seen practically right out of Divergent, or Divergent is seen right out of The Giver, actually. The character that Brenton plays is chosen to meet with the keeper of memories, or the giver, as he's referred to. And he's played by your boy, Jeff Bridges.
Yeah.
And so Jeff Bridges plays this character who has all the memories of the past, basically, you know, and can telepathically link with the special boy to give him some of the memories of the past. And when he starts doing that, he finds out that there's such things as war and violence and hatred. And how could, you know, we go on without acknowledging this kind of stuff? But then you have the elders who want to keep all this stuff in check, and they're led by Meryl Streep. So you have another one of these dystopian futures where the kid is, you know, the special kid is going to be rebellious, go against the status quo, and it has to find a way out, and there's a love interest and a possible love triangle. And a lot of stuff that makes this one of the dumbest films I've ever seen in my entire life. This movie makes Divergent look like Blade Runner.
Oh, man.
Okay. without the fancy step-up maneuvers that Divergent had. I sat there dumbfounded at just how stupid this film is. And doing a little bit of research about the book, the characters in the book were around the ages of 11 and 12. So there's a big difference between a character of that age discovering what they discover and a kid who is 16 and is basically going to be sort of the cutesy pie, you know, kind of Twilight kind of, you know, version of that character. That's just another sort of bland teenage, you know, hero. I can't even begin to list the problems with this movie and just how incredibly idiotic its science is and its ideas. I haven't even mentioned Katie Holmes, who plays the kid's mother, who gets a performance that is just so awful beyond measure. There's absolutely nothing to recommend about this movie. It is one of the worst films of the year.
Okay. The Giver. All right. Does my boy come out unscathed or no?
Not if you're in my head and what I think he actually is in the movie. I don't want to say too much on the air, but I think that I have a theory about his character in the movie that
probably would have made the film a lot more interesting, but far more creepy as well.
Okay. All right. Well, there you go. The Giver. Eric thinks it's one of the worst movies of the year. Okay, Colin, quickly tell us about Dinosaur 13. You guys can handle that one. I didn't see it. So give us a quick synopsis.
Okay. Well, this is a documentary, and I saw it back in February, so my memory is a little sketchy. But it's about a paleontologist, a team of paleontologists who basically they discovered the world's oldest or the most complete Tyrannosaurus rex fossil. They basically, once they unearth this thing, you know, in America, they start what begins is a 10-year battle with, you know, the U.S. government, museums, Native American tribes. Basically, every lawyer comes out of the woodwork to basically make these paleontologists look like thieves. And, you know, they just want to, you know, study it and give it a good home and everything and make sure, well, you know, it doesn't wind up in the wrong hands. But they go through this, basically this 10-year ordeal to, you know, basically keep themselves out of prison, because everybody's coming out in against them saying that they have stolen this piece of property that is a part of this land, that they had no right to come in and dig and take the fossil and, you know, claim it as their own. This is a really fascinating and absorbing documentary that really took me by surprise. I wasn't expected to be, you know, sort of on the edge of my seat as I was with this story about how, you know, where this fossil is going to end up. And actually, there's a Chicago connection to it here too. I won't give anything away, but it's a very, it's definitely a really interesting documentary. I'm glad it's getting a good release. I mean, you know, for what it is, I didn't expect, it's playing at the Gene Siskel Film Center. It's also playing at the Logan, and it's also playing at the AMC Showplace Galewood in Chicago.
And it's also on demand. It's also on demand.
It's also on demand. Yeah. So this is definitely one worth checking out. And yeah, you should definitely go see this.
All right, Eric, what did you think?
Yeah, I agree. For all the reasons that Colin mentioned, it's sort of, you know, the see, you know, we know the sort of the end game of this story. We know, you know, what this fossil is and where it eventually ends up. But that doesn't make it any less interesting of how it actually got there. It's actually even suspense at the end, you know, if the fossil is actually going to reach the destination where we know it to be. It's a really sort of an amazing story of how, you know, governments and lawyers and everyone, you know, wants to claim, you know, history for themselves. You know, I think that's ultimately what the story is about. And it's a fascinating one. It's one that, you know, shows you that, you know, it seems like, you know, no one can discover anything these days without somebody really wanting a piece of it and trying to take it away from you. Mm. And that seems to be almost a metaphor for history. This is a really good documentary.
All right, cool. All right, guys, hang on. We got one more movie to talk about. That's Let's Be Cops. And we will talk about that right after we take this break on 720 WGN. Yeah, man. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Showcase Studio looking out on Michigan Avenue. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. Wrapping things up for the show and wrapping things up for the movie reviews. Colin and Eric are with me, and welcome back, guys.
Hello.
All right. So, Colin, you have not seen Let's Be Cops, correct?
I have not.
Okay. Eric, tell us about Let's Be Cops.
Okay, Let's Be Cops stars Jake Johnson and Damon Wayans Jr. of TL Television's New Girl. And Johnson, they play roommates, and Jake plays a character who was a quarterback in college, and sort of his glory days are behind him. Now he's sort of, you know, sort of aimless existence without a job. while his roommate, Damon Wayans Jr., works in a video game company and has dreams of designing his own video game at work. And to do that, he's doing a game about being a police officer. And for some reason, that allows him to have in the apartment two fully designed cop uniforms, who the guys use to go to a costume party. It turns out to actually be a masquerade party. And on their way out of the party, they discover that wearing the cop uniforms gets them an instant amount of respect. They seem like they can do whatever they want, and the girls are interested in them. After they take full advantage of it for an evening, Jake Johnson's character feels like he wants to just continue doing it, not actually being a cop, being a fake cop. So he gets his own police car, and he, you know, spruces up the uniform a bit, and Damon Wayans Jr.'s character is against that. But then that gets him in trouble with some Russian mobsters that they come across. The movie, instead of sort of examining the idea of taking advantage of, you know, the sort of the power that and the responsibility that comes with being a cop, even in a comedic way, the movie sort of rests in this really ridiculous fake danger plot involving these Russian mobsters, and becomes this. I don't even know why the movie would choose that route of all the possibilities in front of it. The movie doesn't have enough in its tank to sort of go the full zany comedy route. It continually gets sidetracked, including having Damon Wayans Jr. play the straight man, which is one of the worst casting decisions I've seen in some time. The movie that this movie should have probably aspired to be a little bit more like is Observe and Report, which, you know, was a very dark story with Seth Rogen, who had, you know, dreams of, you know, becoming an FBI agent in the film, or a local cop, and then the darkness that surrounded, you know, the sort of insane character that he was in that movie, and you would think that Jake Johnson's character would show a little bit of that, considering of just how irresponsible he is breaking the law. But the movie doesn't come close to that, and so you have this sort of roving, really strenuously unfunny film that just sit there for, you know, 100 minutes going, what were they thinking when they were making this movie? Because none of it is funny, none of it is... close to what Observe and Report accomplished. This is one of the worst films of the summer.
I was massively disappointed with this movie too. And, you know, I mean, you know, we've texted each other about this one, Eric. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'd look at the commercials for it, and I'd go, you know, that's going to be a really stupid movie, but I love those guys.
Yeah.
I love Jake Johnson, and I think Damon Wayans Jr. is great, and they're fantastic on New Girl.
Yeah,
but this is a really stupid and very, very unfunny movie. And I've never seen a movie that has been populated with so many extraordinarily funny people who have nothing to do.
Including Rob Riggle, plays a straight man in this movie.
Yeah, Rob Riggle. You got Jake. We mentioned Jake Johnson, Damon Wayans Jr. Rob Riggle is in this movie. For God's sake, Keenan Michael Key from Key and Peele is in this, who is one of the funniest people on the planet. And Natasha Leggero is in this, and she's awesome. But they don't. There's nothing here. It's just stupid and not funny. And you're absolutely right about them trying to, you know, to make it a serious sort of, you know, sort of like a thriller, and it just bombs completely. Not funny at all. And you know, I would watch the commercials and I go, I can't wait to see this simply because of these guys. But man, what a waste! What an absolute waste of time and of talent, especially. So. Yeah, bad movie, real bad movie. How did it do yesterday?
It's beating Expendables 3 now. It shot out of the gate, did very well on Wednesday and Thursday.
Oh, yeah, that came out on Wednesday. That's right.
Yeah, so it got a bit of a head start. It's going to have like $25 million in the tank by Sunday. So
that's not too bad.
That's nice for Jake Johnson.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
It's a terrible movie, but, you know, I want to see Jake succeed and make more movies. So
yeah, well, he's going to be in the Jurassic Park film.
Yeah, so. Yeah. I heard about that. That's cool. As long as he's getting work, I'm happy about that. All right, guys. So thank you. We didn't get to cover all the on-demand stuff like we normally do, but we wanted to make sure that you guys knew what was going on with the theatrical stuff that came out this week. So what do we got next week?
Next week we got Sin City, A Dame to Kill For. Okay. We got the Trip to Italy opens it out. We got The One I Love with Mark Duplass and Elizabeth Moss, and we have If I Stay.
That's the Chloe Moretz movie, right?
Chloe Moretz movie, yes.
Okay. All right. So lots of stuff next. I'm really looking forward to the trip to Italy. I can't wait to see that.
You should.
I can't. All right, you guys. Thanks a lot, and we'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good.
Alrighty. All right, guys. Take care. There you go. There's Eric and Colin and all the movie reviews for you.